Well, hello everyone. Welcome to Beyond the Matrix. This is the radio show that asks you to, dares you to think outside the box of convention, as more and more of us are doing in these days of incredible shifting. And who better to do it with than my, I have to say my friend by now, Stanton Friedman, because this is his third time on my show, and if you hear a giggle, it's in my voice, it's because I know he's going to crack me up with reality as soon as we get started. Stanton has an MS degree in physics from the University of Chicago. He's a nuclear physicist. He's a lecturer. He's all over this planet trying to tell people about the UFO phenomenon. I just heard he's going to be on Larry King tomorrow. It's a major, wonderful thing that he keeps coming back to my show. That has to mean something wonderful. And tonight we're going to talk about his new book. Dan, how do you get these books out so fast? It's called Flying Saucers in Science. A scientist investigates the mysteries of UFOs. Welcome, Stanton T. Friedman.
Delighted to be here again.
Oh, it's just so great. I just like, oh, the third time with Stan, we're going to party. So what have you been up to with this new book now? How did you get this done so fast?
Well, I thought about it for 5 years, and when, I think our first show, we talked about the book Captured by myself and Kathleen Marden, who comes to the work, Barney Hill UFO mm-hmm. Experience, and Kathleen is Betty's niece, has all her tapes and all that stuff. Well, part of the contract on that book is that the publisher, New Page, has the first dibs, if you will, on my next book. So I was talking to my agent, and I said, gee, John, why don't we submit something to them, get it started early? And sure. So I've been thinking about this book, Flying Saucers and Science, for several years, sort of my magnum opus to be, I'm getting old, got to put it all together, you know, and all that stuff. And we submitted, I had a package ready pretty quick, sample chapter and an outline and answering all the questions publishers like answered, like what's the competition and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And we submitted it, and their first response was, well, let's see how Captured does.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, sure, that's a legitimate concern. And remember on Captured, I don't know if we talked about it on the air, but they wanted to put my name first on the book. And I protested. I said, hey, this is Kathy's book. Betty Hill was.
Yeah, I remember you said that.
And they said, Stan, it'll sell better. Okay, we agreed. And I guess that's a good reason. And so their first response was, let's see how Captured does. And then 2 weeks later, I get a call, and they decide to do my book. So I
had
to rush like crazy. And there is another thing here, too, and that is that today's publishing, with these fancy PDF files and stuff that you can send back and forth, you know, and they get a PDF and they can have a book printed in a very short time. I was amazed. You know, it's the new world. No more typesetting and all that stuff.
Right, so, but you've still got to come up with 300 pages of information.
320, please.
Sorry, but then again, I'm sure that you can do that in your sleep with all of the incredible information that's stored in that brain.
I'm a lousy typist, but the computer helps, you know. And I must say that, yeah, I felt pressured while working on it, but I did want to get it out, and it came out. They were finished the end of May, and I was very pleased. They got a nice advance order from Barnes & Noble, and Amazon, and the nice thing, I mean, I knew it was going to be a great success because a psychic told me that at a conference that I was at. Anyway, looks like she was right, because I was on Coast to Coast Radio on June 22nd with George Knapp, who's a very knowledgeable journalist from Las Vegas, does the show 2 times a month, and we did 4 hours from 2 to 6 in the morning. That's hard on us old guys, but would you believe, within 2 days, we hit number one in 3 different categories on Amazon.com. So that made me very happy.
You very happy. So I'm diving into this book now and understanding why it's doing so well. And lots to talk about here. I'm laughing one of the parts of this book that just killed me is your comments about the SETI project. And so
well,
I'd like to...
You know, tomorrow night on Larry King, one of the two anti-guys is Dr. Seth Shostak, whom I speak about in the book. So I presume somebody has told them, hey, you ought to see what he says about you, Seth.
So let's tell my audience what you say about Seth, who is part of the team for SETI, right?
Yeah, he's the big shot at the SETI Institute, and we met on the Queen Elizabeth II back a few years ago. We each gave three lectures, and we were cordial to each other, and then 6 months later we did a debate on Coast to Coast Radio, and I got 57% of the vote. He got 33, and another 10% said, I don't know. And as I point out in the book, SETI really should be standing for Silly Effort to Investigate. You see, other people are very polite, and they don't want to call a spade. I figure, look, I'm an old guy. What have I got to lose? There are no assassins out there with rifles aimed at me, you know.
Are you sure?
But, well, no, I'm not. But somebody once asked me, how come you're still alive, Stan?
Yeah, they're asking me that as well.
I tell them, look, I'm not going to live looking over my shoulder. If anybody wants to get me, I'm as vulnerable as anybody else. But, look, I had an accident on the way down to a Roswell meeting a couple of years back and flipped my car. My airbag went off. I walked away. The car was totaled. And I went to the motel and caught the plane the next morning from Bangor, Maine, to a couple of places, and then to Albuquerque, and drove 200 miles in a rental car. Somebody up there likes me. I was bruised, but not damaged, you know, my car
not
was.
Stopped. Well, I think this is an interesting point, that all kidding aside, I think it's important to also mention the fact that more and more of us are feeling like they, we'll leave that in quotes, really are getting ready to announce now. I mean, we're hearing that we can grow asparagus in Martian soil. So from there, we can only assume that we are seeing a mechanism of the media starting to get ready to... I think we're going to get an announcement. What do you think?
Well, I was pleased indeed to see that not only had the head astronomer at the Vatican Observatory made a comment that it was okay to believe in aliens, but then the Pope repeated that at a press conference. Now, that's a big step forward. What does he know that we don't know, huh?
Right. I mean, what is he admitting that he knows that we think we... In fact, when that came out, I was stunned because, I live in Rome, and this was big news in the Rome papers. It was like...
Was it really?
Oh, yeah. And it wasn't just, by the way, it was like, you now have permission to believe it. This was the official Vatican posture.
What?
The headline was, the Vatican says it's okay to believe in E.T.
Were the newspapers surprised there?
Well, have you taken a look at Italian politics and life in general?
It's all confused to me.
Yeah, it's kind of funny here. But anything coming out of the Vatican with that kind of impact is something to really take notice of. And it just seems to me that it's part of a mechanism now of routine, pointed... Well, did you hear about the asparagus on Mars soil?
The what?
That we can now... they believe they can grow asparagus in Martian soil.
Oh, well, that would be neat. I like asparagus.
This was an announcement from NASA.
I didn't see that. I've been busy, 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 but three interviews today and more than a week in Roswell and then coming back to a ton of email. I am an optimist, let's put it that way. I couldn't do what I'm doing if I wasn't an optimist. And I've been very pleased with the response to the book because, sure, it's pointed. I don't, take it very gently against the guys who say this stuff is nonsense. I point a finger and say, you guys don't know what the heck you're talking about. Here's what you've said, and here are the facts. They're not the same. And somebody has to say, the emperor has no clothes. And in a sense, that's the theme of this book, that, what you've heard about flying saucers, most of it is junk. And it's time to look at the facts. And even though you won't find them in the New York Times or the Washington Post or on CBS Evening News, the data's there. And so,
yeah,
if we
well, especially
could get
I think that someone like you with so much knowledge and so much, I've never seen anyone who can retain. I mean, in the last time we interviewed you, you could just shoot off dates and figures and names like they were permanently carved on your hard drive, the brain hard drive. So I'm sure that you bring that credibility to the discussion. I mean, let's be honest.
I hope so.
And the book is that, isn't it?
Well, yeah, a book does that, and you know, both Captured also got a very good response, and people were, Kathleen and I were both in Roswell, as it happens, selling our books alongside each other, and we got an awful lot of nice comment from people there, you know, people who've read the book or seen us on television, and it's good to see, to be taken seriously, you know what I mean, it's rather than as a game being played kind of thing, and I know people complain, oh, Roswell, it's a lot of fun and games and stuff. Sure it is. Why else would people come 200 miles from Albuquerque or Amarillo or El Paso? But why do you go places? Because there's something you're interested in. They've had visitors from umpteen countries, all the states, all the provinces. And they come there. I mean, I'm there. I talk to people right at the museum. And so I get a feedback loop as to what intrigues them and what doesn't and what they see on the tube that bothers them or doesn't. And so I'm not a masochist. I don't do what I do to get a hard time from audiences. Quite the reverse. I do it because I like the way they treat me.
I think it's interesting. Also, I had Dr. Edgar Mitchell on recently. And on my show, he just said, oh, yeah, he said, Roswell is real. He said, we've got all the people. We know who. He said, you know, we don't have to keep discussing it or something to that matter. And I said, Dr. Mitchell, are you aware that you're announcing this on the radio? And he said, oh, yeah, he said, it's time. I mean, we can say this now.
Hey, he wrote the foreword. He wrote one of the two forewords to my book now.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, it's a nice little family. I had Yvonne Smith on last week, and she was with you in Roswell, wasn't she?
Yes. Yes, she was. She certainly was. And so,
is she the psychic that told you you'd be a success?
No, she's not a psychic. She's a hypnotherapist who works with
people. Yeah, I know, but...
So forth.
But she's got to have a lot of...
That was somebody, the psychic was in, where was I, Kansas City. Mysteries of the Universe Conference. And she made no bones about it. She saw, call it into the future. I don't know what to call it. But I'm going to hear news. It might as well be good news.
Yeah, well, with all the work you're doing, there couldn't be any other news. I'm sure that the book is flying, and we need it, and that is really great. And I'd like to go back now to the question of SETI, because, believe it or not, a lot of people still don't really know about SETI. And so since I agree with you, I love talking about things that we agree with.
Okay.
Just if you could go back over this, SETI program, their posture and how you perceive this whole, what did you call it, silly effort to investigate,
S-E-T-I.
And of course it really means search for extraterrestrial intelligence. So could you just run that over really quickly?
Okay, the basic idea here is that somewhere out there, there are beings who are sending radio waves to attract our attention. For what purpose is not specified. Hi there, I guess is what it's supposed to be. But anyway, they're sending out signals using techniques about which we know nothing, from locations about which we know nothing, and we somehow, if we keep listening with our best radio telescope receiving equipment, we've had radio for about 100 years, so that's not a long time to develop such equipment, but anyway, we will eventually pick up a signal which will prove that someplace out there is other life and we're not alone. And three cheers for us good SETI guys. Now, the trouble is, and this has been pushed by my University of Chicago classmate Carl Sagan and Frank Drake and Jill Tarter and Seth Shostak, who will be on the show tomorrow night with Larry King and I and James Fox, who's done the movie Out of the Blue. Anyway, the problem that you get into is that these guys totally ignore the UFO evidence. They will consistently say, and I quote the number of their comments in the book, that there is no evidence for UFOs. Now, what evidence do they provide that there's anybody out there able to send a signal and that we would be able to interpret it? Zero. None. Not at all. Nil. There is no evidence, besides the UFO evidence, that there's somebody out there. The UFO evidence indicates somebody is coming here. But they demand that I provide them with a body or wreckage. They don't seem to understand national security. No way to keep a secret. And in the book, you'll notice I talk about some multi-billion dollar programs which were kept secret for decades, not just days or months. They don't want to dig into that. And if people wonder, well, why would you keep it secret? Well, if for no other reason than to find out what the technology is, because we're interested in developing, you know, better systems for delivering weapons and defending against the other guy. That's where the money goes. And anybody looked at the national budget? You know, we're not spending it on listening for radio signals. So they are, one of the interesting things that I do in the book is show how over the last 10 years or so, they keep pushing off. Well, the nearest one, we should be hearing something within 10 or 15 years, and then it's 50 or 100 years, and then, well, there's probably at least one within 1,000 light years of here. And Jill Tarter says that will be the great day for mankind, help us solve all our problems. I mean, they're 1,000 light years away. So you send this signal out, and they're going to give you an answer. It's 2,000 years later. Now, does that make any sense? How is that going to help us through our problems? They're caught by their own notions. In other words, I worked on advanced technology. If there's one thing I'm sure of, it's that technological progress comes from doing things differently in an unpredictable way. I don't use slide rules anymore. For people who don't know, that's what we engineers and scientists used to use 50 years ago to make calculations. Now we can buy $3 little calculators and they can do everything the slide rule could do. But it's not just, these calculators are not just small slide rules. They're entirely different. We use lasers. They're not just better light bulbs. So the notion that about an unknown society at an unknown location that could be a cool billion years older than ours, A, that they would send signals to us to say hi, and that B, we would be able to detect those signals, and C, that we could translate them, and then they would respond. It's funny how the city guys want to act as the middleman. They've got a protocol that they will follow if we get such a signal, and it will be the greatest day in man's history to know that we're not alone. But we want to ignore all that UFO data because, after all, if aliens are visiting here, who needs radio telescopes? Maybe you should learn sign language or something to communicate with them.
Yvonne talked, and I talked about how we do know that, of course, we agree, let's not say we do know, but we agree that there are plenty of aliens already here. And how do you feel about that?
Well, I think that certainly that they're already here and doing their thing. And you see, everything is related to a difference in perspective. I think there's civilizations all over the place in the local neighborhood. That's all I worry about, the local neighborhood. Don't talk to me about other galaxies or across our own galaxy. There's a couple hundred billion stars in a galaxy. So what? I'm interested within 55 light years, there's about 2,000 stars. And 45 of them, 46 of them are similar to the sun, might be expected to have planets and life. But an important factor here is that we've only had advanced technology for roughly 100 years, if you go back to, say, the year 1900. That's before anything nuclear, before DNA, before atoms and all this kind of stuff. Radio was not prominent. All that's new. But what if somebody out there got started a bit before we did? Well, my favorite target, and this is discussed at length and captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO experience, is Zeta 1 and Zeta 2 Reticuli, two stars in the constellation of Reticuli. They're a mere 39 light years away, just a stone's throw away, and they're a cool, two important things. They're a cool billion years older than the sun. Billion. And secondly, the two stars are only an eighth of a light year apart, so they're 35 times closer to each other than the sun is to the next star over. So it'd be much more likely to want to go to another star if you got a neighbor, as opposed to being like us out in the boondocks, and especially if you got a billion year head start on us to develop your technology. Give them 1,000 years. What's the world going to be like 500 years from now? Look back 100 and you say, oh, it's going to change a lot, you know. So the SETI people don't want to admit anything at all about flying saucers. They want a body and a craft, but they provide us with nothing. They don't admit that national security is part of this picture. They don't admit that governments can keep secrets. They don't allow for interstellar travel at all. And so they make a whole bunch of fancy calculations. They call it the Drake equation. Now, when I went to school, if you had an equation, you put different people put numbers in, you come up with the same answer. People try to use the Drake equation. The whole idea of the Drake equation is, supposedly, we can calculate how many advanced civilizations there are in our galaxy capable of sending these radio signals that we might be able to receive. And it depends on how many stars are created per year. It depends on how many of them have planets, and how many of those planets develop life, and how many of those planets with life develop civilization and technology capable of sending signals a long distance away. And it also depends on the lifespan of the civilization. Obviously, the shorter the lifespan, if they don't last very long, not much chance you're going to pick up their signal because they're gone. Now, by not including colonization and migration, they say once you got a civilization, and, you know, what's a good number for the lifetime of a civilization? We know of one civilization, our own. What is its lifespan? We don't know. We haven't the faintest idea. I mean, if we had 100, then you might say, well, the average civilization lasts 1,617 years or something like that. We have no data. Now, if you throw in colonization and migration, then the guys at Civilization A, they colonize and create Civilization B and C, and down the road, each of them having the technology from their predecessor. So the lifetime is not the lifetime of the original one, but the lifetime of that whole sequence. They don't, SETI doesn't want to consider that, doesn't want to think about that.
Now, and there's another question that I've got to throw out here, and that is, of course we're talking about physics as we know them on our planet. But isn't it very possible that communication from another planet, if it is in the form of a radio signal, could just as easily be traversing space through a wormhole or some other means that
well,
is unknown to us, therefore defying the light-year concept?
Well, the light-years are there, but there is another means, and that is being looked at, although the normal SETI people don't, and that's optical SETI. You see, somebody figured out a few years back, hey, you know what? With these powerful lasers we have, which can be used to shoot down missiles, you understand, that's a lot of power. With these signals systems, we could create a signal that could be seen from many light years away. Hey, but if we could create it, then maybe aliens have already done that, so we ought to look for some light signals. You can't do that with a radio telescope. You have to do it with an optical telescope, one that gathers light from out there, like the Hubble or the ones down in Mount Whitney in California and so forth, the Wilson Observatory and all that. So they are looking for optical signals. And those, you don't need to be able to translate, et cetera, just to know that the signal is there and it has a certain frequency and so forth. So they're looking for that. But anything beyond that, of course, they're not looking for because they have no idea what those other things could be. And
sure.
There is another group, SETV, Search for Extraterrestrial Vehicles, which says, wait a minute, if these guys are coming here, they need to talk to each other some way. You know, where do we meet for lunch tomorrow? That kind of thing. And so there are people listening for that because I have twice heard the story independently of a military installation having a saucer on radar and picking up radio signals from the saucer, which is kind of neat.
And, that is neat.
And the security guys coming in and grabbing the information. And you guys, you didn't see it, you didn't hear it, forget about it. So it would be interesting to know what we have picked up.
Do you have documentation of that?
What?
Do you have documentation?
People quietly told me these things. You don't get documentation about this kind of stuff.
Okay, so this is still this, you know, the Project Blue
scuttlebutt. It's scuttlebutt if you want. But remember, as a Canadian was told way back in 1950, this is the flying saucer, the most classified subject in the United States, even more so than the H-bomb, he was told. So when we look at all the blacked-out documents and the whited-out documents, there's plenty of proof the government is holding back information. And remember that the guys with the best equipment for listening for not only signals but for monitoring the skies, you know, the radar and the spy satellites, all this stuff gives you data that's born classified. The uncorrelated targets, I love that phrase. You know, it's not a flying saucer. No, it's not a UFO. No, it's an uncorrelated target, meaning something we pick up on our radar, and we don't know what it is, but we can watch what it does, and ooh, look at that. You know, it doesn't behave the way our things behave. So there are plenty of cases like that. That data is born classified. And it's something that it's very hard to get the city people to understand, because they don't work under security. They don't know about security. If we find something, we're going to tell everybody about it, like they speak for the government. You know, the State Department doesn't like people conducting foreign affairs, frankly. You know, it's against the law. Minor detail, you know. You can't enter into a treaty for the United States. Only duly constituted authority does that. That's one of the laws we work under, you know.
Yeah, we remember how unfavorable it was for Jimmy Carter when he decided to go over and do some diplomatic activities on his own volition. Post-presidency, I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's frowned upon, let's put it that way. But the SETI people, I'm sure we will hear tomorrow from Seth Shostak how that whole chapter should be thrown out. It's nasty and untrue because, really, this is the greatest calling in mankind's history, listening for signals from aliens. And, you know, one of the parts of that that I find really amusing is here we have astronomers passing themselves off as experts on alien behavior. Alien behavior, how aliens would act. What do they know about how Earthlings would act? If you were looking for advice on our society, would you go to an astronomer? I don't think so. You'd go to a psychiatrist, a psychologist, you know, a lawyer, a doctor, a nurse, a social worker, but astronomer? Where do they fit on that scale? You know, think about that for a minute. The stars don't have personalities, the last time I checked, you know. So we have this crazy situation. They will tell us how Earthlings would behave. Governments wouldn't keep this secret. Governments can't keep secrets. And there's a whole bunch of stuff in the book about secrets that have been kept. You know, these guys don't
know. Yeah, let me just interject something here, just for the people that are just tuning in. Tonight I've got Stanton Friedman on. This is his third time on my show. His new book is called Flying Saucers and Science, and we're talking about SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and his opinion about that program. And please be sure to listen in tomorrow night. He's going to be on Larry King Live with a couple of people debunking him and his opinions, and we're going to all want to catch that show. So sorry about that, Stan, but I just, you know, sometimes people come in at the last minute, and I want them to know, what crazy man is talking? With such respect, of course.
Yes, of course.
Suddenly you feel quiet.
Well, you know, one of the things that I try to do in the book is to give a sense of perspective. You may have noticed a chapter on flying saucers and science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And people are shocked when they find that science fiction writers have in the past not been friendly toward the notion of flying saucers.
Mm-hmm.
And I quote stuff that was written by Isaac Asimov and Ben Bova and Arthur C. Clarke, who are great science fiction writers. I don't have a problem with that. But they said some very stupid things about flying saucers. And one of the surprising things is sort of the lack of imagination. I expect science fiction writers to be imaginative. For example, how can Isaac Asimov say that if aliens were coming here, they would either keep hidden or they would make themselves known to those in authority. And if they do neither, they're not coming here. Well, I got a bunch of squirrels who live in around the woods around my backyard. And I don't hide from them, and I don't talk to them. Not very often, anyway. So, get off my roses, you know. But you see my point. There's a lot of ground in between hiding and sure. talking to. And Arthur Clarke talks about the fact that radar installations can pick up things the size of nuts and bolts, and his whole implication is they haven't picked up UFOs. Well, that's nonsense. In the first place, we do have excellent radar visual sightings, but in the second place, why would he think he had a need to know for that information? That data's all born classified. That's the way.
You know, I just think that it's kind of it's almost a moot point. I think that we are so close to the point of finally having a breakthrough here. It feels so imminent that soon the secret can no longer be held. What about all of these sightings? I mean, my God.
Well, as Stephen, I'm very pleased about the radar data on the Stephenville, Texas cases. There's been a report compiled for the Mutual UFO Network, and that'll be featured at their conference next weekend, not this weekend, in San Jose, California, the annual symposium.
That's where I'm from.
They got good radar data. Now, they had to use Freedom of Information to get the FAA to fess up to it. Oh, we don't have nothing. What do you want from us? Well, they filed a request, and they got it. And it is clear that the two different kinds of things were found. One was radar data of unknowns without transponders. Now, normal aircraft carry a device which, when a radar signal hits the device, it sends back information. You know, this is flight 3742. It's not voice, but it's numerical. So they have a number of reports of monitoring returns from systems that do not have transponders, whose behavior could not be duplicated. You know, very high speed, sudden stops and starts, and all the rest of that. The second thing is they have clear-cut, unambiguous data about the F-16. What was that?
I don't know.
Hello?
I'm here.
Hey, maybe it's the aliens up there, huh?
It was
maybe it's the government.
Well, it like, duh, it wouldn't be surprising if there was interruption on the phones.
Hey,
I'm sorry, just keep going.
The other day I did a radio show, and when I started to say something about the government cover-up, suddenly we lost the connection. I don't know.
You know, that's happening a lot now. I kind of take it in my stride.
Well, good. So do I. I mean, what the heck?
I don't think we have much of a choice, you know? Huh?
There is another voice on there.
Yeah, this is the producer in the back. I apologize for that. It was a caller probably putting antics, being, you know, funny.
Okay. That's okay. We can...
Nothing like a little joke to liven things
here
up.
Here we are talking about picking up signals with SETI, and we get our own signal right here. I think that's kind of a cosmic twist.
Oh, I like that cosmic twist. Silly effort.
You like that?
That?
You can have that.
Okay. All right.
All right. So, Beth, where were you? I lost you now. We got sidetracked a second here.
Well, I started to say that there are other things in the book that will surprise people. One of them was the science fiction writer's antipathy to flying saucers. Another one has to do with the five major sources of the scientific studies that I talk about, and to counter the notion from the SETI guys that there is no evidence. It's funny. I read their books. They don't read mine. And they certainly don't reference them, even if they don't read them. And the way of science should be that you withhold judgment until you've studied the evidence. not start off by saying, I know there isn't any evidence, so I'm not going to waste my time looking for any because there isn't any. You know, it's a self-fulfilling.
And because it would interfere with my whole concept of life on this planet.
And life out there as well.
And life out there. Listen, one thing I really want you to talk about is, well, first of all, I admire you so much because you have an incredible sense of humor and you carry this through your work and it makes it so much easier to reach your message because there's humor. And I find humor is the ultimate form of communicating. So
yes.
Why I've got this giggle going nonstop is because I found so much of this humor in your book. And you've just got to talk about, and a subject that I think is very interesting in the book, is alien motivation for coming to this crazy planet. And you talk about reasons for visiting, the list of reasons for aliens to visit us. And because I think that as people are so concerned and frightened and misinformed and just every kind of emotion about this imminent event, I think that a little bit of humor about it and some insight is important. And so this list is on page 167, Reasons for Visiting. And would you like to talk about these?
Well, yeah.
I just love this list.
It's fun because I do a lot of traveling and, you know, when you stop at O'Hare Airport, for example, waiting for a connection, as I was the other day, you start wondering, is everybody here for the same purpose, their flights? No, of course not. There's a zillion different reasons for traveling. That's the first thing. That, you know, to try to one reason fits all is silly. When people take the Queen Elizabeth II across the ocean or around the world, there's not just one reason for doing that. People want to see people. They want to gamble on a ship. Who knows? A whole slew of different reasons. I mean, the Wright brothers were different from, or Lindbergh, who flew across the ocean to win a $25,000 prize, which was a lot of money in 1927. So I try to stand back and say, okay, what are these guys doing? What do we know about their behavior here? They seem to pay a lot of attention to our military vehicles. There, all kinds of pilots have chased UFOs and not caught them, or been chased by UFOs, which is a little more distressing, I guess. So they want to find out about our flight capabilities. Well, I know that there are other situations where that is true. We want to know the capabilities of Russian fighters and Chinese fighters, and you need to know the technical characteristics of your enemies, what frequencies they use for their radio signals and all kinds of stuff. That's important.
Uh-huh.
And I point out that in 1952, the Air Force ordered pilots to shoot down UFOs if they don't land when instructed to do so. Now, 52 was our biggest year at Project Blue Book, and things were happening in 52. We were anticipating the Russians might attack us because we were busy in Korea. We were changing our capabilities. In other words, we didn't have a big radar net before that to monitor the skies. We put that one in. The airplanes got faster, and they started using little Mighty Mouse rockets instead of machine guns, which have rockets have much greater range and much more damage in a warhead. So there were all kinds of things going on which would make aliens want to check these guys out. What's happening here, you know? And when you see things like that first H-bomb in 1952, 3-mile-wide fireball. Can you imagine that? The equivalent of 10 million tons of TNT in one lousy, and it really is a lousy explosion. If you were an alien, you'd want to know more about that. But so I try to list a lot of reasons for coming here. One of them surprises some people, and I have a new piece of data that isn't in the book. And I pointed out that the Earth is the densest planet in the solar system, to which most people would say, who cares? What difference does it make? Well, a pound of Earth, on the average, weighs more than a pound of any of the other planets, which means you are more likely to find dense materials, elements, here. Things like uranium, gold, osmium, rhenium, iridium. I mean, people talk heavy as lead. Forget it. These are almost twice as heavy as lead, and they're rare. Interesting, rhenium, high melting point metal, used to make materials stronger at high temperatures, good for jet engines kind of thing. little bit helps a lot. Anyway, the price of rhenium 2 years ago was only $1,000 a kilogram. That's 2.2 pounds. It just went up. It's $11,000 a kilogram. That's a lot of money for a little bit of stuff, because a kilogram of rhenium doesn't take up much space at all. So that's an example of all these things that are here that we may not even have cared about at all. Silly comment, but it's true that uranium was used primarily for yellow coloring agent on China back 100 years ago. Not a big demand for that purpose. Today we build nuclear power plants and nuclear weapons, so we don't want to talk about them. But so they might be stealing goodies. That's one thing. They may have been stealing them for 1,000 years, for all we know. But more important, I think, when you look at all the reasons for, and you know my list includes great reasons like a honeymoon capital of this corner of the galaxy, or vacation, you know, spend 2 weeks
specimen
working.
Specimen gathering for an ET zoo, I like.
Yeah, radio broadcast, there's one right up your alley. Idiocy in the Boondocks would be the proper title for it, I would think. You know, why do people, look, an example that I use, maybe people aren't old enough to remember, but Bobby Fischer was a great American chess champion. He met for the world championship with a Russian. Where? Iceland. Now, why would you go to Iceland to have a world chess championship? He did. Mm-hmm. You know, so people travel for strange reasons. So when I boil it down, I try to point out that there's one, it seems to me, primary reason for somebody checking us out. We are a threat to the neighborhood. Why do I say that? Because we're such nasty beings. We
explode A-bombs.
We're spending, I mean, you know, it sounds like simple-minded. We will spend this year, we earthlings, over $1 trillion on things military. $1 trillion. Yeah. And yet, we will allow at least 30,000 children to die every single day of preventable disease or starvation. It's okay to spend $1 trillion for weaponry, but we can't feed our kids. Now, if you were an alien wondering at the local latest meeting of the Galactic Federation Intelligence Agency, what are we going to do about those idiots down there? They can't seem to get their act together. I mean, I thought reports indicated during World War II they killed only 50 million of their own kind and destroyed 1,700 cities. You'd think they'd have learned a lesson from that. But these earthlings, they haven't learned a darn thing. They're still killing each other wholesale.
It does seem like a plot from Star Trek, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. So I'm making only one assumption. They're concerned with their own survival and security. That means you got to keep tabs on the primitives in the neighborhood, and only close tabs on those primitives that show signs of being able to bother you. And, you know, the SETI people may laugh, but we will be able to go to the stars very shortly. We have the capability. We don't want to spend the money right now. But, you know, it's like going to the moon in 1940. Space travel is utter bilge, said the British Royal Astronomer. Well, it wasn't utter bilge. We did it. It took a large commitment of funding and people and all that sort of stuff. So I think they're here to make sure that we don't go out there. And while you're at it, check out these guys. They're genetic material. They may have come up with some new genes that we need out here. Check them out for maybe we can get rid of the nastiness. You know, find out which...
Well, that's a nice way to interpret... Because, you know, Yvonne was talking quite a lot about that, about the tests and the abductees and the samples being taken, and it does frighten people. So the spin on that, that it could be for a positive reason, is a message that I'm glad that you bring out. Do you bring that out in the book as well?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think it's time we recognize that, hey, we have some responsibilities. We're not paying much attention to the world of the future. I've got a great grandson. I wonder what happens to him, you know. And can we? I've been shocked to find that many people in the younger generation have no idea that 50 million people were killed during World War II, that 1,700 cities were destroyed. And that was before nuclear weapons, except for the last, 2 weeks of the war. What could we do now? And so I'm concerned about how we must look to others and what can we learn from the past. And I think aliens, they may have all kinds of reasons for coming here, as long as you're down there, graduate student theses. Maybe we're the only place in the neighborhood that doesn't all speak the same language. And somebody's trying to figure out, how come? Another one might be saying, well, how come on this planet you have people with so many different colors? No place else are they so varied in their coloration. Is this the result of colonies planted here, a million years ago, or what? And so there are a lot of mysteries about this planet. But we'd like to ignore the possibility that there's a lot of other civilizations in the local neighborhood who think of us as the poor sister, so to speak, hardly worth dealing with until we became a threat to them. And I, as far as I know, every civilization is concerned about the threats in the neighborhood. And I've heard people say, well, why would they be afraid of us? After all, we're so primitive. A poison dart from a native in the jungle is just as deadly as a laser weapon strike, don't you think? Dead is dead.
Yeah, and I also think that the nuclear... Well, first of all, we've got all kinds of weapons that are as bad or not worse as nuclear now. And we're playing with so many new toys that I definitely think that we're dangerous enough to disturb. Like you and I agree on so many points. And definitely, we can now surpass our immediate borders, let's say. And we are a threat to the balance of our little corner of space.
Yeah.
As much as we are to ourselves.
Yeah, we don't seem to want to be concerned about the planet as such. Now, maybe because in America we feel that, hey, we're the big shots, even though we've only got 300 million people, and even though we talk about one vote, one person and stuff, but we ain't going to buy into that, not with the Chinese with four times the population and India with three times the population. Oh, no, we're going to keep our power structure. And one of the themes that the point I try to make throughout the book is that what we're really talking about here, why do governments cover up, is another story that I deal with in the book. But people in power want to stay in power. That seems to be a natural earthling tendency, doesn't it? We don't want to give up any power. It's nice to talk about one world, but we want to ride high. And so that's another concern here as the world dynamics change. I mean, look what's happening with oil. What happens if the aliens have a better means of energy production than burning oil? All those rich guys, their stock ain't going to be worth much.
Right, but how much richer do they have to get?
Well, you ask them. Greed seems to be one of our... How shall I put this? Major driving forces on Earth, isn't it? I mean, I could never understand when I was visiting California and heard that banks were loaning not the value of a house minus a down payment, but the value of a house, let's say $500,000 plus a premium. You want to pay $500,000 for this house? Well, I'll tell you what, we'll loan you $550,000 because we know it's going to increase, and of course you're going to be paying interest on that extra money. And of course the person hasn't put a down payment on, and I ask people, I say, how can you sustain that? What if the property value doesn't go up? Well, that didn't bother, so how many banks have now failed? It was greed, simple earthling characteristics for some earthlings, apparently not all. Those things worry me.
Now, Sam, I mean, this is not on the subject of the book, but since we're on this subject, what do you foresee as the future, the economic situation globally, of course, if it's happening in the States, it's global, but, I mean, over here in Italy, it's looking pretty darn bleak over there.
Well, it is bleak over here, and, it's funny. I noticed the price of oil has dropped the last couple of days. Maybe that's a good omen, but... Here you have something that costs less than $30 a barrel to get out of the ground, and we're paying $135 a barrel. Now, what's the sense of that? Where's that money going? I look at the pictures of Abu Dhabi with these incredible structures being put up, you know, and the enormous income those people are having just because they're in the right place. As the head of Israel once said, how come God chose the only place in the Middle East that doesn't have oil? For Israel, you know, not fair. But,
I'm just back from Dubai, and it's very strange to be in a thriving economy.
Well, sure, and it's very strange on what it's thriving on. They're taking something that's Mother Nature's out of the ground, paying very little to do it, sending it overseas where people pay these enormous prices for it, and they reap the benefit. And on a planet, like I said, with all those kids starving, and in Africa, which is not far from Abu Dhabi, you wonder, wouldn't an alien wonder, well, what's with these guys? There's rich over there and real poor over here. Haven't they learned the need to take care of their society? And it
apparently
was the answer,
not.
Well,
yeah, the obvious answer is apparently not.
No.
Stan, what have you heard about craft coming in? I've heard stories. I've never had anything really concrete about craft coming down and emptying out an entire lake. In other words, sucking up lakes worth of water into the craft. Do you know anything about this?
I haven't heard about an entire lake, but I have heard about sucking water out of a lake, not all of it. But, you know, it's one of the points I try to make about planet Earth being different from the other planets in the solar system. We're the only planet that's three-quarters covered with water. We're, you know, the only planet with a lot of oxygen in the atmosphere. Be a natural place for beings to come. And even if they're using fusion propulsion, takes isotopes of hydrogen, and water is H2O, you know, it's a good place to get it. And I like the notion of aliens coming into the water, unidentified submerged objects, and scooping up the nodules of metals that are at the bottom. They're practically pure metals, incidentally. What do we do at the bottom of the ocean? We hide our nuclear submarines there with their nuclear tip missiles so we can respond if somebody attacks us. They won't know where we are. And there goes that militarism again. You know, not to recover something worthwhile for the benefit of the planet, but the power structure. And, you know, the older I get, the less happy I am about how things have gone. I thought, I've lived through the Depression and the war. I thought things were going to be great later because we would have learned a lesson. I don't think we have.
It wouldn't appear so.
It's downright distressing, to say the least. But the one notion that uplifts me is that I think that there are other beings in the neighborhood, that they're doing their thing, that they have solved these problems. We haven't been working on them that long. I just hope they have patience. Not to say, oh, the heck with these guys. Give them a deadline. If they can't get their act together, we'll wipe them out and start again. Because we're with the Galactic Federation are sick of these idiots. You know.
I don't think it's that serious. No, I think that we do have some kind of a deadline here. And that the gig is up, as they say, because we are having just so many sightings now. I'm sure that you're abreast of more than I am of the incredible amount of sightings that are taking
there's
place.
There's plenty going
now.
On. MUFON gets over 400 a month. 400
wow.
a month. And so it is the Pope's comment, as I said earlier, is an intriguing one. What does he know that we don't know? And
well, as I said, it really looks like we've got a plan. You know, plan B time, okay, we can start to leak, we start to get them ready for this reality. Little bits like you can grow asparagus in Martian soil and, you know, it's okay to believe in ET and all of, I mean, can you imagine, how good do you feel about the Pope saying you can now have permission to believe in ET?
Yeah, I was
kind of feel good about a thing like that.
Well, I heard Father Balducci, but he's just connected with the Vatican. And then we moved up a step, the Vatican chief astronomer, and then we got
right.
the Pope. You know, it's like, yeah. Hey, didn't you hear him? Well, let's listen again, guys, and then let's listen really again. The big man says it's okay.
It sounds like a Saturday Night Live skit, but it's really true. It really, really has been said and it has been put in print.
Yeah, I'm glad it got some attention over there.
Oh, it did indeed. At least it got my attention.
Well,
so
okay,
tell me a little bit about your vision now for what's coming as far as the alien awakening, if we, for lack of a better term. What's coming now?
Well, I'm hoping.
That's a big question, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd sure like to know, and I don't usually make predictions, but I'm hoping that some media group, I doubt if it'll be the New York Times or the Washington Post, will stand up and say, you know, it's about time we really dug into this. We got this radar data from Stephenville. We have the Air Force lying at first saying, oh, there weren't any F-18s flying. Oh, wait a minute. 10 days later, there were 10 of them. You know, people are disgusted with these lies and misrepresentations. So maybe some of the younger guys will finally wake up and be counted. And, you know, I keep quoting to people. I just had a conversation over an hour ago with about General Carol Bolander's comment, Air Force General, 1969, saying that reports which could affect national security are not part of the Blue Book system. He said it twice in the same memo. When I talked to him, he meant it. Well, shouldn't some newsman say, well, wait a minute, what do you mean? I thought Blue Book was the only Air Force investigation. Not according to Bolander, and he named the regulations, the Joint Army Navy Air Force Publication 146 and Air Force Manual 55-11. Isn't it time we looked in those? And also, and I'm hopeful on this level, that some of the guys who are now in their 80s, and this happened, there was a new witness at Roswell, a guy who handled wreckage. He didn't see any bodies, but he handled wreckage. Some of these guys are saying, you know, what can they do to me now? You know, it's time to speak out. Because the government has broken its deal with the former military guys. They thought they were leading or helping and protecting the security of the United States. But so what has happened to justify that? Why should all these people be put down because they said they know something about flying saucers? So
it's not only the United States, is it?
Well, it isn't, but the other countries are getting better. When James Fox finishes his Beyond the Blue, which will include representatives from several different countries, and it should be within the next few months, he did Out of the Blue, and then this is well beyond that, that's a good sign. I think then we'll get a lot of attention. These are the people who testified at the Washington Press Club back last November. People from seven different countries, including a couple of guys who said they were ordered to shoot down UFOs. Those are big words to say.
Those are big words to say. You know, these are guys that are 80 and aren't afraid of speaking out?
These guys are a little younger than that, and the little guys are the 80-year-olds. These guys have a little more status than that, former generals, former colonels, people like that.
Yeah, well, that's what's interesting. So many military people are speaking out now.
Well, there are a lot of guys kind of disgusted with not only with Iraq, but with how the guys coming back from Iraq are being treated.
Indeed.
They sacrificed everything, and they're not being well treated in the United States. Their families have serious problems and so forth. And the kicker is, with better medicine, a lot of guys who would otherwise have died have lived, but they need a lot more help. You know, missing limbs and shell shock and all the other problems. So,
well, this is the same thing that happened in Vietnam.
Well, yeah, except it's worse now. Because
I mean, it's wonderful when you're being sent, the ultimate patriotism of going. It's just about the best thing that you could possibly do. But when you're back, you're a non-person.
Well, yeah. The Vietnam guys certainly found that out. And so there is foment, if you will, amongst the military. And who knows what happens after the election is over. Maybe somebody has suggested Obama in March is going to say, here's the truth about aliens. I don't expect that, incidentally.
I don't think that would be a good idea for his life expectancy.
Well, that's right. And I think if you're going to make an announcement, it should be on an international level. It should be saying that here's a preliminary look at what data we have. We have international conferences scheduled on the religious, political, economic aspects of this whole UFO scene. Technical. And I, for one, don't want technical data out on the table. Because a lot of bad guys out there. And they listen to the radio,
well,
too, you know?
Yeah, well, maybe it'll just be, you know, no adjustment of your set is necessary. And we'll get direct explanation.
Well, that would be nice.
You know, this
I'm
is not a test. This
it.
Is not a test.
What?
I'm saying maybe we'll just get direct communication on the from the television with some being saying, no adjustment of your set is necessary. This is not a test. And
oh,
we'll get
yes.
the explanation right from the proverbial alien's mouth.
Well, you know, you have to figure that the cover-up has been, the aliens have been involved in it in some way or other, some kind of an agreement. And there's a guy named Art Campbell who's done some outstanding work on General Eisenhower making a hidden trip from Georgia, where he was supposedly there to play golf, out to Alamogordo Army Airfield. He's found witnesses to the plane landing at the end of the runway and to a saucer landing as well. So if we could get some more of those guys to come forward.
Yeah.
Just what did Ike agree to with these guys? What's the deal? How many years do we have before they're going to say,
hey. That's what it feels like. Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like the time is up. This is what it feels like.
Well, yeah, that's right. And my website is www.stantonfriedman.com if the time is up.
I think the time is probably up. I have lost sense of the time, and I always do when I talk to you. But let's just remind everybody, your wonderful book is Flying Saucers and Science.
They can get it through my website.
Your site is Stanton. It really is StantonFriedman.com?
That's it. That's it. Very simple, very straightforward. It's got to spell my name right, FRIEDMAN.com.
But I'm sure that people can find it since it's already on all the top lists on Amazon. They can find it in all of the leading sites and bookstores and whatever.
And they can
yeah.
watch me tomorrow night? Yes, they can. It's in the bookstore.
Yes, I will watch you. And can people get a signed copy from you if they buy it from your site?
If they buy it from me, like off the website through PayPal or by sending a check to Post Office Box 958, Holton, Maine, 04730-0958, it's on the website. I autograph all the books I send out.
Oh, great. Well, that's an incentive to come directly to you. Any last-minute message you want to give us, Stan, about the future of humankind and our alien interactions?
Well, keep track of what happens on Larry King tomorrow. There might be blood on the floor. I hope it's not mine.
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to be flying, so I'm going to have to get it taped. But I'm going out to the crop circles and see what's going on out there.
Good.
But I'll be with you in spirit.
Thank you much.
Thank you, Stan. And everyone, tune in again next week. Not sure what we've got going next week because I'm going to be coming to you live from the crop circles, so we will see what's cooking there. Thanks again to Stanton and all the
You're
people that
welcome.
Are putting yourselves out there, speaking your truth, helping people get used to a new reality. Maybe just an old reality, but a real reality, if that makes any sense at all. It's been wonderful having you, Stan, and I know I'm going to be asking you to come back, so please stay in touch. Goodbye, everyone. Do your homework. Stay with your minds free, soaring with the eagles of expectation of what can be, and always remembering freedom is ours to choose. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to Beyond the Matrix.